But what I do think, and I absolutely believe in, is that you have to make a decision. You have to at some point say, okay, I want something different. What is that something going to look like? And maybe it isn't what you think it is at first, but I think, you know, the advice I would give anybody, whether you're thinking about doing an executive MBA or whether you're thinking about changing careers, is start taking a step, start moving, start saying, okay, I'm going to stop thinking about this and I'm going to start taking action, whatever that action is.
Rebellentalk, dergroßefreiheit.com.
Ja, und hier sind wir wieder, die zwei Positionierungsrebellen der großefreiheit.com, Jens Alsleben und
Jörg Christoph from Hamburg in a sunny day, because we have to talk in English today.
Yes, our first podcast in English, thanks to Gary.
And we are very happy about that.
Yeah, Gary Anello is with us today. Thanks for joining us. Gary is a very interesting guest we have today. He will introduce himself in a little while, but what I like about your profile is it's such a broad spectrum. You're introducing yourself as a business storytelling coach, consultant, and a certified Berkman consultant, and an EMBA Career Center manager at the WHU, the WHU in Koblenz-Wallendar, one of the most prestigious business universities in Germany. Very, very interesting. Thanks a lot for joining. And how are you today in your personal life and in the world of coaching?
Both are pretty good. Thank you. Thank you. First of all, thank you for having me. And again, I'm honored to be here and to be the first English speaking guest on Rebellion Talk. It's great. It's great. Thank you very, very much. And thank you also for accommodating the fact that my German is not so great. There's a few different hats that I'm wearing. I do have a pretty broad background. I originally came from, as you can hear, from the United States. For the first half of my working life, I was a professional actor in the United States. It's what I went to college for. It's what I studied in at university. I got a bachelor's degree in theater, and I lived in Chicago, Los Angeles. Did that for a number of years. Essentially for the first half, as I say, of my working life. Decided I wanted to try a number of different things. I loved doing that. I still love doing that. But I knew that if I stayed doing that, I would be limited as to what I could experience in the world, in my life, in the working world, in terms of career, because that requires so much energy and so much focus. And so I decided to branch out, and I got into teaching. I got into training, a few different steps that are quite detailed I won't go into, but I found myself in Italy, then in the UK, doing a master's degree in human rights, and then back in the States for a short time, and then back in Italy, and then ultimately in Germany in the corporate training field. And it was all of that that a couple of years ago led me going into Kellogg WHU at the executive MBA program as the career center manager. And I think that really sort of finally tripped the wire, where it sort of all came together. And I thought, this is really interesting for me, this whole idea of preparing yourself for a new career and how you do it and what are the steps you have to take and what does it mean when you want to change careers, because I had done it myself. And so I understood for the executive MBAs sort of what they go through in terms of the next steps that they want to take. And I found that really, really fascinating. And I really wanted to be a part of that. And I was fortunate that they said, yes, okay, let's do it together. And so I've been doing that for almost 2 years and got into the coaching kind of as an outgrowth of that. And the storytelling kind of goes back to the theater background and the idea that we hear so much now in business about storytelling. And I used to train in business storytelling at my previous work. And being able to tell your story and understand the why you do what you do and why it matters and what's important about it and where you want to go because of all of that. It's important to be able to tell that. And I don't think that people, I don't think enough people know how to do that well. And so that's where I come in, and that's what I focus on. And I say coaching and consulting because sometimes there is sort of skills training involved when it comes to the consulting. There are things that they have to know. It isn't just sort of coaching and trying to guide the person to come to their own solution, which is part of it. But it's also, look, if you want to make a powerful presentation, you want to tell a powerful story, these are some things you should think about as you're doing it, which is kind of goes against the grain of what sort of traditional, as you know, sort of traditional coaching is. But yeah, so that's me in a very sort of a very large nutshell. So
my burning question is, yeah, what about with your why? Because you told us you you have been an actor, or you are an actor, I don't know. And now you're a coach. Where is your why? Is it changed your why, or is your why the same, or where's the bridge between?
That's a good question. I don't think that it has changed. I think it has. I think what's happened is over the years, I've really got to another layer of it, you know, and all of the thing about, you know, when you start with why, and why is that important, and why is that important, and why is that important. And I think as I go through my life, I get closer and closer to what that core why is. And every time I get to another layer, I think I've reached the core layer, but then there's always another layer that comes after that. So I think I'm at the core layer now. I think I'm at the basic understanding, which is we all want to have impact in our lives. We all want to make an impact. We all want to do something that's meaningful. And I also want to say, this is why I love working with the executive MBAs. There's all the stereotype around MBAs in general, and particularly executive MBAs. But what I find is that the executive MBAs really, really, really want to make a difference. And I think we all want that. And with my skills and with my having gone through some of that experience, I bring all that to bear in the situation and help them, you know, really get to the core of what matters to them and how they can make best an impact wherever they are, whatever that work is, or whatever that work ultimately turns out to be, because it may be different.
If you want to make a difference, I think the difficult thing is you have to dive deep into your soul. And how do you assist the people to do this?
It's through a combination of things. It's through sort of traditional coaching. Really, you know, you keep asking questions. You keep asking questions. What matters about that? What is that? What is important about that? I was just having a conversation with a coaching client, and the client was thinking about some issues that he was having with an employee of his, and which really aren't a big problem for him. But in the end, as we kept talking, you know, I think slowly we're revealing it is a problem for him. There are consequences. There is an impact on their business. And so how do you go deep? I think it's really not settling for simple answers, which is sometimes a challenge if somebody really wants to give you a simple answer and not go past a certain point. But I think it's having the patience to not accept the first answer that you get. I think that's really important. When somebody says, oh, well, the answer to A is B, and then you just let them go, and then they start thinking that, well, maybe actually the answer is not B, maybe it's C or D or E or F or down the line, and having the patience to let them get there and not, well, this is where the tension comes in between the coaching and consulting is, and not say, well, okay, right, so this is what I think you should do. Right. It's so hard to not do that when there's another part of my business that's sort of very solutions oriented, very skills oriented, to not say, yeah, okay, so you figured it out, so now let's fix it. That's a challenge. But I think ultimately, I think to get back to your question, it's really about having the patience to let them sit with their own thoughts, their own feelings, their own questions, and let them, you know, let a person really ask their own question and let them go with it.
What makes you special in this with your why? What's your core to do this? Because to ask questions is not so difficult, but what's your special skill? What has to do with your why? Has maybe to do with your past as a actor?
Yeah, it absolutely does. I think it has to do with my past as an actor, because of the idea that when I was an actor, it was all about, when I was creating a character or telling a story on stage, it was really about what makes someone tick, what makes somebody do what they do, and what are the consequences of doing whatever it is that they do. And so and that also carried into when I did my master's degree and my human rights work. The individual and how the individual experiences the world is really vitally important to me. So that creates a level of empathy that I think I have when I start talking to clients. And also, just professionally speaking, the fact that I have gone through a number of different steps, just in terms of the physical barriers that I've encountered trying to get a new position somewhere, trying to change direction after a certain age in a certain country, you know, there's challenges to that. And I've experienced that. And so I feel that, you know, when clients come to me and say, well, you know, what do I do? Am I ever going to be able to, you know, am I ever going to be able to crack this? I mean, I've been there. I feel that. I can't guarantee anything. I can't guarantee a result or promise an outcome. But what I can say is, I feel where you are. I've been where you are. I understand. I get it. And let's see what we can find together.
Mm-hmm. When you started working at the WHU, what did you understand was the purpose of your services? So why does a university offer these kind of services to their students? What was the real reason?
Yeah, the real reason, I think, is that the executive MBAs in particular come into the program really, as I said, wanting to make a difference. And it used to be the way executive MBAs were structured, that employers would pay for or at least partly sponsor the tuition for the executive MBA. Following the financial crisis in the mid-2000s, they don't do that anymore. So now a student comes into the program funding their own executive MBA, and it's a sizable investment, financial investment for them. And so they really do want an outcome. They really want to see that they're developing in terms of leadership and they're developing in terms of career. And at WHU, although my title is Career Center Manager for the Executive MBA, what I'm focused on is coordinating and managing the leadership and career development module of the Executive MBA. So when I joined, it was really about, you know, we have coaches. They do come in and they work with the students, and we have a great relationship with the coaches. But WHU knew that they needed to develop that, because the demand on the part of the students was growing and growing and growing. They really wanted to focus on career development. They really wanted to focus on leadership development. And so we offered workshops, and we offer career coaching, and we offer leadership coaching. But it wasn't enough, or it needed somebody dedicated to it. So somebody sort of managing it or being the coordinator for it. But what I also said when I came in was, I want these students to be able to tell a story of their leadership and career development. Because right now, the way it was, not now, but when I came in, it was more ad hoc. It was more, here's the coaching. Here's the workshops, all important, all vital, all necessary. But what I really wanted to do was I wanted to kind of shift the thinking a little bit and make it about the student, the executive MBA candidate, telling a story about their leadership development. So they had a clear sense of what their leadership was like when they started, and they have a clear sense at the end of what their leadership is like. So again, it's the story. It's an arc. It's about development. And so I came in just managing it, making sure that the bills were paid and making sure that the coaches showed up when they were supposed to show up and making sure that there were workshops ready to go when they were supposed to be ready to go. But as I've been there and working with the program director, who's fantastic, and with the career center director, who's fantastic, saying, you know, I want them to be able to tell a story. I want them to be able to draw a line in their development, not just say we got these workshops.
And you wanted to that change because you thought, what is so important about drawing the line?
Because I think being able to see, to being able to step back from their journey after the fact, that they can track their own development, they can track their progress, they can see, well, I started out as this kind of a leader and now I am this kind of a leader, rather than just say, you know, they just, otherwise it's this sort of this sense, you know, that you're pulling these leadership skills from the air and trying to see, well, how do they fit together, or do they even fit together? I don't know, because we have workshops on different kinds of skills and in different situations. And so it was really about, can we create something that builds on what we did previously? And can we deliver workshops rather than just deliver them when it's convenient? Can we deliver them in a way that is connected perhaps to their academic content? Is there something about this leadership workshop that we want to deliver that resonates with their academic content? Can they draw a line from that to the module that they're working on? Because the program's modular, they're there for five days at a time every 6 weeks or so, 6 to 8 weeks. So the question is, can they connect dots rather than it just being kind of ad hoc?
So that falls into the SMART idea. So you have to be able to measure it somehow, your progress, also to argue the value for money type of thing, right?
Right, absolutely.
But what I would like to know is if you look at the numbers of students who now were able to draw back a line to where they started, what is the most interesting development they feedback to you? What changed during that course, and what was surprisingly different from what they originally expected the program to have an impact on them?
So there's actually two ways to answer that. There's two answers to it. When I first started, I led a, and I still lead, every module, twice per module, something that's called a guided reflection. It's completely voluntary. And it's also completely confidential. They come into the lecture hall. I ask them a couple of questions that are connected to leadership, that are either connected to the academic content or connected to the workshop they had done the previous day, because it's usually done on the third and fifth day of the module. And I ask them a question that is connected to it. They have a book that they journal in when I ask the questions. I give them time to reflect. And then at the end of that, I give them time to exchange ideas, to volunteer, to share any information that they came up with, or any thought that they had, or any question that they had. It's completely wide open, and it's completely up to them what they ask, right? And the first time I did it, and this continues to be the case, this sentence continues to be the case, a student, the question I asked was, what has surprised you most about this first module? Because I asked it at the last day. So but what surprised you most about your time here this first time around? And one of the candidates said, actually this reflection. And I said, how so? And he said, because we never really get a chance to sit down and ask ourselves where we're going. We don't get that chance to do that in our work. We're all so busy. We don't have the time to stop and reflect, which is fundamental to the whole coaching process, right? Because you have to have time to reflect. And so he said, we don't really get a chance to reflect. And so I'm really grateful that I've had this opportunity to just stop and think and ask myself these questions and let whatever comes up come up, right? So I think that's been a really, that's been a change in the program that we've done in the last couple of years. And I think it's really profound that they're surprised when they actually stop and in the coaching which is when they kind of expect to do it, but also they're encouraged to just take a breath in the middle of the module, to just stop and think about something for a few minutes in the module. And as I say, it's completely voluntary. I get about 50% of the cohort showing up for this reflection in the morning. It's at 8 o'clock in the morning before their classes start. And so I'm really pleased that 50% or so show up on a regular basis. And again, completely confidential. And it's not, since a lot of them are in Zoom now, it's not recorded. So there's no record of it anywhere. And then the other thing is more about the career development. Students very often come into the program with a very clear, they think, idea of what they want and where they're going. And more than once, and I always tell candidates when I interview them for the following cohort, that it's not uncommon, because it has happened every year multiple times, that a student comes in and says, okay, this is what I want to do, this is what I want to achieve. Can we start the career coaching now? When do we start the leadership coaching? I want to get going. And if they insist, if that's what they want, that's what they want. That's what I'll give them. That's what I'm supposed to do, right? I give them what they want. That's what they want from the program. But what I do first is I encourage them, again, to take a breath, to think about how much they have on their plate at the moment. And if they are willing to consider waiting until the next module before they take such a giant leap. And usually people say, yeah, okay, you're right. There's a lot going on. I haven't studied in 20 years. I don't really know what I'm getting myself into. And invariably they come back the next module and say, yeah, remember everything I told you about what I wanted? Never mind. I'm not thinking about that anymore. Because what happens is they get exposed to so many different industries, so many people at so many different levels, and they get stimulated by all this kind of exciting change that's going on around them, both in their own lives and in the lives of the cohort around them, that they just get completely surprised by, I think, the possibility in terms of career. I think they're surprised by the possibility. And I find that it's unsettling for them, which I completely understand. And I tell candidates this, it is unsettling for them, but I love it. Because what that tells me is that they are absolutely 150% taking their careers seriously. And they're really, really focused on making a considered, thoughtful, and to the extent possible, the correct decision.
How old are your students in the middle?
The average is
you, because my experience is when they are too young, they can't understand how serious that might be to become a leader.
The average age for our executive MBA is 38. So yeah, and they have typically about a decade or so minimum of I think 13 years. I think the average experience is 13 years.
Okay.
But work experience. So they're kind of ready for that change. They're ready to take on responsibility, or they're ready to moving from perhaps a senior manager, and they want to go to C-suite. They want to get to that level. They want to get to a boardroom. or they've had enough of the work that they're doing and they really feel that they're capable of a startup, of becoming entrepreneurs.
I know exactly what you mean. When I did my executive MBA, I was 33. Mm-hmm. I did an European partnership MBA program with Lufthansa, Merck, MCI, mm-hmm. WorldCom, and Deutsche Bank. And it really blew me away to see the variety of job opportunities out there and to really get in touch with other people and really get to know over a period of 2 years about their work life and about the career management in the different companies. And a lot of us changed jobs afterwards because it was the time to reflect. It was the time to make friends without any competition. It was the time to really rethink everything. And there was one moment when we did the FIRO-B and MBDI psychoanalysis tests, mm-hmm. and I got the results, and that lady, she just looked at me and said, "You aren't quite comfortable in your job, are you?" And back then, I was under a little bit of pressure, and that really, and I never forget that. It was a December module, and in January, I talked to my boss and said that I want to move on. Because that was the kick I needed, and the bravery of my comrades around me to support me in just change, you know, and that was a lovely experience. And we made friends, really big friends, and we still are. Most of my closest friends are still from the MBA time.
Mm-hmm. A great team. So my question is, I would like to come back to the storytelling.
Sure.
And what do you think makes a good story? When people, they have life experience and they have your program, and what the main point from your point of view, what makes a real good story, not good, measurable from the heart? What do you think about?
I think ultimately, yeah, I think that's a good point. I think ultimately it's about the heart. I think where it becomes meaningful is it's about the change. It's the core of what makes drama, drama. There has to be a change. There has to be things go up and then go down, or they are here and they go way, way, way down and then they come back up again. And I think the more that you make your story, whatever that is, whether it's about your business, your career, your life, your personal situation, the more that it is about transformation and the extent to which you were reluctant to make that transformation and when you embraced it, or maybe you didn't ever embrace it, but it's about that transformation and the kind of impact that it had on you. And people always cite, you know, the Star Wars trilogy and, you know, as storytelling examples. And I think they are great storytelling examples, because here you have a hero. It's a classic hero tale. He didn't want to do what he did. He had no choice. And then he realized at the end that he was kind of destined to do it all along. And what would have happened if he had not embraced what he should do. And I think I think stories like that are really, really powerful. And so what makes a good story is the transformation that happens.
What do you think? Are they brave enough to face that own truth?
The candidates, the executive MBA candidates, or I think they are. I think they are always undertaken a huge commitment financially and in terms of time and professionally. By and large, yes, they know what they're getting into. They may not know quite the extent of what they're getting into, but I do hear it all the time. And it's not unique to Kellogg WHU's executive MBA. I hear it from executive MBAs, and Jens, maybe you can say yourself, you kind of expected transformation. You didn't expect the transformation that you ultimately experienced. And friends for life is something I hear all the time. I thought what you said, Jens, was beautiful about, you know, you were suddenly in this environment where there was no competition, right? And I think, you know, I think that's a really powerful, that's a powerful thing to understand about the executive MBA. People aren't really competing against one another. It's not like a typical job situation, right? Where you're trying to get ahead. You're not really trying to get ahead. You're really there to support one another.
Yeah. So, as we are not promoting an MBA program, I think I think it's really well considering, worth considering. But what really is interesting for us is they come in as leaders at the average age of 38, and they go out as different leaders. And there is something which changed in the middle. But what changed in their leadership behavior? What about the morals, the leadership ethics, the leadership methodologies? What is their view of the world after the MBA being coached and consulted by you guys? And how do they approach their business as transformational leaders thereafter? So what changed?
I think it's a lot of things, but I think ultimately it's about, you know, when a leader goes from point A to point Z, I think the word that you said is really key, transformational. And that can be a lot of different things to a lot of different people. But I think ultimately a leader they come into the program a certain kind of leader, they leave a different kind of leader. Perhaps a more authentic leader, perhaps a more a leader who's more inclined to show up for the people that follow him or her. I think, it's an easy question, but it's also a very complex question, because I think it's different from person to person. It really depends on what they bring to the table with them when they come in.
Sure.
The extent to which, you know, the extent to which they're coachable and they take on board the coaching that they get. But I think it's about transformational. Do they want, wherever they start, I think the goal ultimately is a leader who is responsible, who looks out for the people that follow them, who is also extremely aware of their responsibilities to the organization that they represent or that they lead in. So I think it's a lot of different things.
So what we do is, when we work with our clients, we ask them to come up with their leadership principles.
Right.
So that means the promise they make to their employees with regard to leading them. And those leadership principles have a lot to do with their core values, their archaic life motives, their talents, their strengths, and it is hard for most of them when we start working with them to express that. We help them express these archaic needs. Yeah, thank you. To also translate that into what does that mean for me as a leader? Question for you. Are you kind of asking for that? Are you getting an idea of their core values, who they are as a human being, and translate that into leadership things?
One point more, and it's the needs are one point, and the dark side of life. Are you brave enough to put a light into your dark side of life and take it into your life to the bright side and live with this? I think that's a form of transformation, very important. If you want to become an authentic leader, you have to take your dark side and you have to know everything about your needs. And then you have to take questions like Jens said. I think it's my point of view.
I agree, Jörg. I think the coaching itself, I don't do the coaching of the students. We have coaches, we have a pool of coaches that work with our executive MBAs. So they do the coaching, and each one has a slightly different style and a slightly different approach to coaching. Because it's coaching, I don't have any sort of, you know, direct contact with the content or the outcomes or what gets discussed, only the extent that if one of the candidates wants to share that with me. There are coaching conversations that I'll have with the students that's not sort of official coaching, but it is a coaching type conversation where I will ask these kinds of questions and I will try to get them to kind of uncover what's going on and what's deepest going on and kind of where they think they might be headed. We also have, you saw on my LinkedIn profile that as a Berkman consultant, we use the Berkman at WHU. And the Berkman, speaking to your point about the dark side, the Berkman, you know, works along four dimensions. It works along your interests, your usual behavior, your needs, and your stress behavior. And so when they do this questionnaire, which is a little bit like the MBTI, but a little bit not like the MBTI, and a little bit like DISC, but a little bit not like DISC.
Whatever.
as they all are. But I like the Berkman because I don't think it holds up a mirror. And I think it helps you look square in the face of what happens when you're not, it's the usual behavior is what happens when your needs are being met. And the stress behavior is what happens when your needs are not being met. And so I think it's useful to have, I do individual debriefs myself with the students at the beginning of the program. And we don't shy away from, you know, what happens when you don't get this? What happens when you have this need and it's not being met? Berkman suggests that this is what happens. How does that resonate with you? Does that make sense to you? Would you say that that's accurate? So I think you're, to your point, absolutely. I think you can't really shy away from, you know, those things that are maybe not, you know, the most flattering part of you, or where you might jump the gun, or you might jump to conclusions, or you might get upset about something that your colleague sitting right next to you would never in a million years get upset about, but you do. And so how do you handle that? How do you manage that? And then how do you incorporate it in your life so that you can lead effectively?
If those guys have passed the MBA program, then they are much more self-reflective. They have come across a couple of ideas and methods of how to look into their own dark and bright sides. Mm-hmm. They have the Berkman. They have leadership modules where they learn leadership methodology and so on and so forth. So they are kind of well aware of their responsibility as a leader, and they are well aware of their pros and cons, their personal pros and cons. So now flip forward 10 years, you are now an alumni, and I know you have a great alumni. Mm-hmm. Are you asking them what did change through the MBA with regard to you leading other people? What is your reflection back over those years?
Do you mean the personal life or the leading life?
No, both. I think you can't divide in between.
Okay.
Because your personal transformation also reflects into you, your leadership behavior. But what I wanted to know is it a positive reflection after all those years, which, if it was, would then mean or underline the importance of that training with regard to leadership? And that's our point, you know. We think we have to do much more in training people effectively to lead others. And now you are someone who does it. What is the outcome after a couple of years?
After a couple of years, I can say that the outcome is that, yes, they are. I think they do emerge from the program more self-reflective. Since it's only been in the last couple of years that we've had this really concentrated concept of an arc of development and an arc of leadership. Again, it's been sort of in the past ad hoc. So previous cohorts and alumni from 4, 5, 6, 10 years ago, it's difficult for me to speak to that. But yes, I certainly would hope that by the end of it, they feel that they are more self-reflective. And again, I just know anecdotally, talking to the students that are in the program now or have just graduated from the program, they do talk about kind of the focus on leadership and the focus on really kind of interrogating themselves as leaders and how transformational that process has been. It does remain to be seen, but I know that I think it's going in the right direction simply because we do have alumni who do make a point to comment that the focus on leadership development has been appreciated. And I know, you know, in the past I have heard alumni who have expressed that they wish there had been something more structured years and years and years ago, but that's true of every executive MBA. You know, I mean, as I said, it's been really been since the mid 2000s that executive MBAs have thought, we really need to focus on this because the students are much more focused on their own career outcomes, their own leadership outcomes, because they're paying for it themselves.
If you have to make a choice and you have to make a decision to that you are allowed to take only one thing from your program, what do you think is the most important thing of your whole program? The core, for example.
Of the entire program itself or from the area that I work on? For the entire program, it's a really good question. I think it's along the lines of what you said earlier, Jens, about this idea that you're in a group of people and you're not competing with one another. Okay. I think the sense of community that you create is really crucial because that community gets you through the program and that community sustains you in a very difficult program. And it sustains you and supports you after the program. So I think it's about the community. Mm-hmm. The academic community, the leadership community, it's all about community.
It's very important for us to know because we have a club from with entrepreneurs and leader. Mm-hmm. And that's our idea, to make a community with no competition, with being free being brave enough to talk about the dark side and the bright side. And we think that's the most important thing. Because I ask you. Thank you.
Yeah, I think that you know, I just had I was just doing a thing a few weeks ago with our leadership coaching provider, and the discussion came up about psychological safety and how important that is in a learning community, in a work community. You have to have the psychological safety to voice your opinion, to make mistakes, to learn, to fail,
and to reflect all the time,
and to reflect, absolutely. And you have to have the psychological safety to be able to challenge the person that's, you know, signing your check every month. You have to. If you don't have that, I think you don't have a community in which people can really be the best that they can be. Mm-hmm. Which sounds very woo-woo, I know, but I think it's absolutely true.
I know what you mean. My main aim.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thank you for doing it, because I think it's an amazingly important thing to be doing.
Yeah, and to be frank, there is no way in a normal life at the age of 38 to 40 something to really make friends, mm-hmm. new friends in a non-competitive environment. Mm-hmm. It is one of the really rare events in your life where you can do that. So stepping out of your normal working life and go and do another grade, another course, another a program gives you that opportunity. And that is also giving you new supporters for your life. Mm-hmm. And that is really undervalued to many, that they only see the costs. And it's not even the network that I get a better entry ticket into other companies or whatever. It is really, really about making friends and readjusting your whole social environment.
Absolutely.
The question is, how can you improve your career? And there you have some golf clubs, some sailing clubs, different business clubs, mm-hmm. but there's no one you can be you. You can't be authentic, and you are always playing a role. And that's not our aim to improve a career. Our aim is to build friendships where you can be you, and that's the most important thing. And only in this environment you can move forward with your personality and with your career.
Mm-hmm. You know, occasionally we do. Students who join our program, they want the network, you know, the extensive network between Kellogg and the extensive network with WHU, which is true. I mean, it is a genuine thing. It is a powerful network. But it always, you know, every so often there is a student who really seems to be kind of obsessed with the network. You know, what can they get from the network? What can they get out of the network? And that's always, it's not a bad thing, but it's always, if not a red flag, it's a little bit of a yellow flag. And so you just think, maybe it would be good if the perspective here shifted a little bit, you know, really think about what you can contribute to the network, not about, and that is something that we ask in our interview process. What are you going to contribute to this? Yes, I know what you want to get out of it, but what do you want to give to it?
And the bottom line is how to manage relationships. Hmm.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's the main question. What can I give, not what can I get?
Right. Right. And this all is about the community. It's all about how you develop these strong ties with the people that you spend a huge amount of time with over the course of 2 years.
Yeah. It also makes you a more humble leader.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think in terms of the concept of humble leadership, I think the more that you can ask questions as a leader, the more that you can say, help me understand. I don't know the answer to this. How do I figure this out? What can you do to help us solve this problem? How can you help, you know, how can I help you solve this problem? Not I have the answer, but how can I help you solve this problem? Or how can we all solve this problem together? And yes, of course, a leader has to take charge at some point. But yeah, the humility, so important, so important.
Absolutely. So we have one problem. We are running out of time.
No, we're not.
Very sorry.
We are. Oh.
Very nice to talk to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
It's been fantastic.
Maybe one last advice, hint, idea, which you want to come bring across for our people listening.
For our audience, yes.
Sure. I think, you know, it goes back to an earlier question. It underpins everything that I do. It underpins the reason that my coaching and consulting business is called Late Is Now, that if you really want to do something, you just owe it to yourself to start figuring out how to do it and start figuring out how to do it now. I don't think that anybody can have any career they want at any time that they want in their life. But what I do think, and I absolutely believe in, is that you have to make a decision. You have to at some point say, okay, I want something different. What is that something going to look like? And maybe it isn't what you think it is at first, but I think, you know, the advice I would give anybody, whether you're thinking about doing executive MBA or whether you're thinking about changing careers, is start taking a step, start moving, start saying, okay, I'm going to stop thinking about this and I'm going to start taking action, whatever that action is. Maybe you just look up one job on LinkedIn, but don't do that because there's looking for jobs on LinkedIn is a waste of time. But anyway, but yeah, I think it's, you know, that's the idea behind the Late Is Now, is that you have to start. It's not too late to do anything. It's now. You've got to do it, and you've got to take action, a tiny action, but an action.
And you are never too old.
Never too old. No, never too old. And again, you may not get exactly what you had in mind initially, or that may not be what's in store for you. But you absolutely have to take action and try to figure out what that is. And no, you are never too old. Ever, ever, ever. There's always something different ahead.
100% with you. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So we finished our first English podcast.
You did great.
Thank you.
You did fantastic.
Yeah, made it easy.
No, thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Take care. Stay healthy. Continue your wonderful work.
Thank you.
Have an impact on our future leaders, which I think is a great purpose.
Thank you very much. And you do the same. Please stay healthy and stay well. And greetings to everyone in Hamburg, in your world, and everybody that's listening, wherever they are. Stay healthy.
We hope to catch up with you every once in a while and see how it goes.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. Let's definitely stay in touch. Great. Bye-bye. Thanks so much.
Bye.
Have a good weekend.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.
Rebellentalk. Der große Freiheit.com.